Assalamu alaikum and welcome back to 786 Boulevard. This is episode 40. Yes, I'm hot in this and other quirky responses with Huda Fahmi.
It's always about extremes when it comes to these Muslim characters. Either they're just like oppressed or terrorists, or they're like taking a shot, you know, at the club or something. And it's like, you know, so I wanted to really write a story where it was just about a Muslim kid who is struggling with identity, which is a totally normal thing that teenagers struggle with. I wanted to point out just how difficult it was for Muslim kids, because they not only have to figure out who they are as Muslims, we also have to figure out like who we are outside of that. Where do we fit if our Muslimness is not the only thing that's going to define us?
Huda Fahmi is an author and cartoonist whose webcomics you have certainly seen all over the internet. Her hilarious comics poke fun at the real-life situations that Muslims find themselves in every single day. She has published numerous best-selling comic books, including Yes, I'm Hot in This, That Can Be Arranged, and the upcoming Huda FRU. We'll be having an insightful and occasionally emotional conversation with Huda on the story behind her craft, using humor to deal with anxiety and overcoming painfully outdated Muslim tropes, and so much more. Hope you enjoy the conversation, and thanks for joining us here once again over at 786 Boulevard. Huda, assalamu alaikum, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Jazakallah khairan for having me on.
No, thank you so much for joining us. It's really a pleasure. We've been following your work for quite some time, and it's incredible to see just how far you've come and how much your work has blown up and how many people it inspires all over the world. And honestly, we're really just really honored that you chose, that you gave some of your time to sit with us and have a chat, inshallah. I wanted to start off just with one of your books I was reading about. We were just speaking about it offline. Who the F are you? And I felt so weird typing that out when I was writing the questions. But Huda FRU basically talks about, I guess yourself and your family who just moved to Dearborn, Michigan in the story. And how about how, you know, everywhere else you are that kind of hijabi girl, you kind of stand out. Whereas in a place like Dearborn, we're just speaking about it offline, it is a bubble where everyone is a hijabi girl. So you have to almost find different ways to stand out. You know, we're talking about being lost in a sea of hijabis and you can't rely on your hijab to define you anymore. And what's interesting is that you talk about the character being miscellaneous, which makes her feel like no one at all. And I just find that so interesting, because usually when you think about, conversations around Muslim characters in stories, it's always about, okay, they are the Muslim character, their Muslim defines them, their Muslimness defines them. But then when you're stuck in a bubble of Muslims, you know, how do you kind of find your niche? So I guess the question I wanted to ask was, why do you think that story is so important to tell?
I think just like you said, it's so common to see the Muslim character as playing this token Muslim in TV shows or even in books. And it's always, it's always about, extremes when it comes to these Muslim characters. Either they're just like oppressed or super, or terrorists, or they're like taking a shot, you know, at the club or something. And it's like, it's just a really frustrating, profile that we have to see ourselves, or we're forced to see Muslims being represented this way. And so I wanted to really write a story where it was just about a Muslim kid who is struggling with identity, which is a totally normal thing that teenagers struggle with. I wanted to point out just how difficult it was for Muslim kids, because they not only have to figure out who they are as Muslims, they have to figure out, you know, and where they fit in their community. But we also have to figure out like who we are outside of that, like how, you know, where do we fit if our Muslimness is not the only thing that's going to define us? Because I feel like we can be Muslim and it doesn't contradict the way we live our lives in any way. Like I could be a, you know, Olympic fencer and still be Muslim. And that doesn't, you know, my Muslimness has nothing to do with me, you know, being like an Olympian or something for whatever reason. So I just wanted to write this story, and I felt like it was really an angle that was never really talked about or mentioned. And I really hoped that a lot of people, Muslims, Muslim kids specifically, could, that the story could resonate with them as well, that it's okay to struggle with not knowing who you are, and we all do. And it's okay to not, like, to not just be seen as the Muslim kid. And this is how I dealt with it, or this is how my character deals with it. Which, by the way, I would like to point out that even though it does take elements from my real life, this is not an autobiography. This book is not a memoir. It is definitely fictionalized. There are definitely elements that are, like I said, kind of based on my life, but for the most part, it really just takes experiences that I've had, and I just kind of went from there to tell a story that I thought could resonate.
How much of that kind of including yourself in the story? I mean, I know a lot of, for example, actors, when they write semi-autobiographical films about themselves, there's always a sense of they got to poke fun of themselves, right? They got to make fun of situations they've been in, or, you know, make fun of themselves. And I mean, what's that process like for you? Because obviously, you know, it's not a biography. Not everything happened as it was, but I'm sure there's elements of it which were either inspired by real life things or, you know, kind of poke fun at you as a person yourself. I mean, is that the case firstly? And I guess, how do you kind of navigate that, you know, respecting yourself, but also kind of poking fun of yourself to bring out an important lesson or interesting narrative?
I'm very much just self-deprecating in real life. I do. That could be just having really low self-esteem issue.
Welcome to the club.
Right. Between me and my therapist. But it's just, I think that's just the way I'm in the way that I've written myself and in my comics, on Instagram and in other books. I like to see myself as this very much like I always know what to say kind of, personality, which I don't in real life. Everyone's hindsight is 2020, right? And I, in my character art, her hindsight is right there. You know, she doesn't have hindsight. She's got it. She can actually just say whatever she wants to say, and she knows exactly what she wants to say. So I take scenarios or situations that I imagine and things that I know that in real life I probably wouldn't know how to respond to, or it would probably break me in real life and I would get super depressed. And in the comics, I try to feel like, you know, I can say whatever it is that I want to say at the exact time that I want to say it. And a lot of times it comes out sarcastic or you know, but funny regardless. And hopefully empowering or inspires confidence in the people who read it, that they can do it too.
You know, what's interesting is I was listening to your episode with Young and Muslim before we started, good friends of ours, inshallah, we hope to have on soon on this podcast. And you were mentioning about how, hopefully I'm not misquoting any of this, but you were mentioning about how your husband really helped you find yourself and really come to terms with, being comfortable with yourself, which I think is a journey that so many of us are on. I'm definitely on that journey right now. I've been on a journey all my life of constantly trying to understand myself. I think all creatives suffer from this crazy, weird, you know, annoying thing where, you know, we express ourselves to kind of iron out our subconscious trauma that's there somewhere. Hasnain, I'm sure agrees with me. But I guess, what was that journey like in really finding yourself? Because I do get that impression when I read your comics and your fantastic work that you are navigating yourself while at the same time you're comfortable enough with yourself to be able to tackle these issues.
Yeah. I
mean, what's that journey been like for you?
First of all, it's definitely like very therapeutic to write this, you know, to draw and write, because I can definitely take any trauma that I'm feeling and just get to talk it out and explore it in my work. And and I know nobody asked for that, but it's like, you're stuck for the ride. You're going to have to. Going back to your question. Yeah, it's, I feel like I really do owe so much to my husband, who is, may Allah preserve him. He is, just one of the smartest men I've ever met in my life. And he's just so, to me, just so such a compassionate man, but also he will call me out on my own. Like if I'm in a pity party and I'm having this, you know, really low part of my life, and he'll be the one to be like, boom, 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 here are the things that you've done. And why you this is like, I'm trying to uplift me, trying to make me see really what my value is and what makes me I'm almost worthy out, even like away from him. Like he doesn't attach it to himself so that I'm tied to him or see my worth tied to him, which is something that is so amazing. First of all, because I can, it really does make me see myself as, you know, this person who exists as me, and that I am worthy and I have value. And if God forbid, you know, something happened to him, I wouldn't immediately like crumble or something. So he really was the one who, but I feel like he was the one who kind of fueled that. He really helped me just by him existing and me watching him in his own life and how he lives his life without getting into too much details, because I don't want to embarrass him and I don't want to, you know, reveal anything that he doesn't want me to reveal. But I know it seems so generic. I don't know. I mean, there's ups and downs, but like just really, it really helps to have somebody who you feel like is always really in your corner, who's your biggest cheerleader, who's just, you know, supporting me 100% in everything that I did, just in telling my story and be like, you have a story to tell, just tell it. Just, you don't know how to draw, that's okay. Just start, you know, stick figures are fine. And, you know, he and my older sister as well, who's also very much encouraging. I don't know how to explain it. I just feel very, very blessed, alhamdulillah, very blessed to have the support system that I have, alhamdulillah.
I'm going to jump in here before Nuri cuts me off like he always does. So going back to Nuri's point on, you know, kind of like making fun of yourself for the sake of comedy and for the sake of just, you know, feeling that comfort zone, you know, like, you know, it takes a lot of confidence for you to be comfortable doing that. I mean, I make fun of myself all the time. People make fun of me all the time. And it's a joke, you know. But then as you progress in your career, like, you know, where is the boundary for you to be like, okay, I want to be taken more serious now, you know, because something that, you know, I struggle with is just that there's a point to where I'm a funny guy. There's a point to where I want to be taken serious. There's a point to where I want my craft to be taken serious, right? Which is why it's been years now since I even stepped into the role of comedy, because I want to be portrayed as a more serious artist now. Do you kind of face that with your artwork and with what you're going through?
I want to say yes. I flip flop between embracing the whole comedy, just embracing it completely, and just saying, okay, I guess this is who I am. And I actually recently had this struggle when it came to, you know, I'm paying somebody right now to develop a website for me. The question was, do I want it to be more serious, or do I want to lean into the comics and the comedy section of what I do? And it was, you know, I don't know why, it was really a struggle to figure out what it was I wanted to do. And it felt like I had to decide right now. And in the end, I mean, spoiler, but I chose to just lean into the comics because I said serious. I want to be taken seriously. I want to be able to take people to hudafahmi.com and they'll be able to see that it's not just, yes, I'm hot in this, and it's not just my graphic novels. But then I didn't think I was ready for that right now. I haven't done anything serious yet. And so I figured, okay, everyone who knows me from my comics. And so I just leaned into it. But I could see myself definitely changing or moving. I don't know necessarily going into something serious, if that's going to happen. Maybe it will. I don't know if I can handle too much serious right now. I use comedy a lot to just as a relief, as a, you know, stress relief, as a coping mechanism, which is right now, which is just important to me. And serious is serious. I don't know if I'm ready.
It is very serious. Yes.
I don't know if I want to, I don't know if I want to expose, because I feel like I can hide myself behind the comedy, you know?
I completely understand where you're coming from. I'm sorry to cut you off. I completely understand where you're coming from. And, you know, I have, for example, as a filmmaker, right? Like I have stories that I correlate with my own life that are just so deep, you know, whether it's something as crazy as a heartbreak, right? Or something as crazy as art therapy, or if it's something as crazy as losing somebody, right? It's so easy to, and you know, we've been trained in film school to always throw comedy into a serious film just to make it more serious, if that makes sense, right? It just kind of humanizes who you are. But for me, it's just that if it's something where you want the audience to feel that emotion, and it's with your, you know, drawings and whatnot, that you want the audience to feel something, where I stand is mostly like, you know, if it's a serious topic, it's going to be a heavy, serious topic, because I want to jerk that emotion from the audience from in that regard. But Nuri, go ahead, carry on. That's all I was going to say.
You know.
I mean, I talk about serious topics, but in a like a really lighthearted way, topics that for a lot of people are hard for them to digest, or even, you know, which sucks, because I feel like I'm candy coating or sugar coating these really serious topics, because I feel like that's the only way some people are going to get, you know, the joke, or not the joke, but like the lesson, or mm-hmm. you know, it's such a double-edged sword. Like, is it my job to really hold people's hand and walk them through the microaggressions and the macroaggressions that we go through? And It helps for sure to be funny and talk about serious topics because it feels like approachable to a lot of people. I don't know if that's the same. I'm sure it's not the same exact thing that you're talking about. There are other serious topics that, you know, you just don't talk about with a
It's funny using that word ironically because humor is something that I never, in terms of like my art, either be it my poetry or my screenwriting, which has been going on for 5 years, as Hassan knows. Hopefully one day my rocketing screenwriting career, right now it's just like a personal thing that I never managed to finish. But none of my scripts or my ideas for films have any humor. They're all very, very dark. And even the art that I consume, the films and TV shows that I like, my wife gives me hell for it because she's like, everything you watch is just dark and depressing. And you know, and for me, it's like, I know it is, but for me, it's like, I find this in a weird way. I find beauty in consuming that kind of media, even though I'm just crazy. But I find that really interesting. You mentioned something which kind of connects to a question I did want to ask you about how you use humor to tackle serious topics. And I think humor, it's a very interesting tool. I remember a few years ago when Jon Stewart was presenting his show on Comedy Central, I was reading an article about how he's the most trusted man in America at the time because the news was so, I guess, you know, so hard to trust. And generally, I feel like people resonate more with comics than they do with I guess, either storytellers or real newscasters, be it your Dave Chappelle's or your Hassan Minhaj's, etc. Because I guess that there's an element of truth, there's an element of sincerity there, maybe perhaps that they connect you, that they manage to connect to. And you've seen this trend, especially with comedians, that they not only do tell comedy now, but they also use it to tell, you know, very serious, to drop some serious knowledge as well. I remember Hassan Minhaj's, for example, Netflix special, which I'm sure you've seen. That guy took me from laughing out loud to tears to laughing out loud because he'll be telling a joke and then he'll say, oh, after 9/11, my dad said this and like, oh my God. And then he goes back into the comedy. It's like, oh, he just took me out and threw me back in. I guess what I wanted to ask you was, why is it, why do you think humor is such a great tool? I know you said that you kind of like, you kind of, you know, debate to yourself, about how whether or not you should be using it to what extent, but why do you think humor is such a great tool to shed light on important topics? Like for example, systematic Islamophobia, which you've also talked about in your comics as well. Why do you think humor is, you know, so relatable, such a good tool to use for that?
I once read that the fastest way to get people on your side is to make them laugh. And it's resonated with me ever since. Just the fastest way to get people to kind of see your point of view. You create a connection when you make somebody laugh. I think there's an instant bond with the person that you has made the joke, with the person who gets the joke, and you automatically feel connected, like they get me, and it's a bond immediately that's formed. And you want to be friends with the one who's making you laugh. You know, you like that shot of whatever chemical it is that's in your brain that makes you smile, but you can't help but also think about what they're saying as well, and it almost creates a type of empathy, I guess, for the subject that is being talked about. And I know there's probably a formula for it, for humor. I don't know what it is. It's so hard to explain what it is that makes a joke work or what it is that makes humor work. But I know that whatever it is, you know, part of it is definitely that it, you know, connects people. And I've always seen my life, any mistakes, any tragedies, any trauma has always been, for me personally, I've always seen it through a lens of humor. I've always had to laugh or else I just kind of cry all the time. So it just, you know, I tell the joke and people laugh and create a bond and hopefully you edutain the masses and let them see kind of feel your pain in a lighthearted way, which is kind of such a weird, funny thing to say, but yeah.
I think when it comes to like somebody like Hassan Minhaj, I think Hassan because Minhaj. We've been, yeah, whatever. Hassan Minhaj.
We're gonna get him on in like 100 episodes, so you gotta, you know, say his name properly at least.
I'm gonna refer to him as Mr. or Sir.
Sir.
I think because we've been consuming news growing up in such a specific way, to finally consume news in a way that you'll remember, because it's not, I mean, I remember the information he tells you on his show simply because of the show, like him himself, right? When I refer back to, oh my God, like that episode of Saudi Arabia and what he said about this, what he said about that. so on and so forth. I think that that's kind of the new wave of delivering news, right? Like we have like The Onion. It's not a serious news channel,
but probably more successful.
It's so funny the way they deliver the news that you have to go and research, like, what is this true? And then you kind of find the truth within it, right? And then the Bond, like you said, I think that's an amazing thing because I am not a serious person. Unless it's business, unless money's involved, and I'm a very serious person. But you know, whenever I'm with my friends, you know, I'm always joking around, right? And that's kind of what makes the moment memorable. So, you know, when my friends are going through a tough time, it's always about that funny moment to kind of take them out of that reality, right? For just a few moments for them to feel that relief to come back in. So, I just kind of wanted to throw that in there.
Love that all wisdom. Right. Hoda, I wanted to ask, I know you mentioned, I heard you say that, you know, you hadn't started these work, you hadn't had much experience with comics before, I guess the last few years. But in terms of growing up, did you grow up around comics? Did you read any comics? And like, what impact did they kind of have on you? What did you read?
I was in love with Sunday comics. I read Garfield. I think I'm pretty sure I learned English from reading Garfield. Because our parents used to speak to us in Arabic growing up, and then they kicked us into like you're going to public school now, and we're like, what? I remember playing a game of tag and not understanding how to tell someone, I promise I'm not it. So I'm like, wallahi, I'm not. And it's like, oh, and they're looking at me like, what? And I'm like, Google, like, dictionary, how do I say this word? Like, what am I trying to say? Mama, what does wallahi mean? And I'm like, it's so kid who doesn't speak English. Anyway, but I loved, and it was such an easy way to digest, like I said, idioms and sarcasm and jokes. So you could get kind of understanding of how, I guess, non-Arab speakers or English speakers in America were talking. Then it was just every time we would get the paper as a kid, you just see pictures and you want to look at the pictures. So I would always go to the Sunday funnies and just like look through the comics. And my mom taught us how to cut out the comics and put them on skewer sticks in a tissue box and like roll it like we were making our own TV. And it was just like, I feel like every part of my like growing up, there was a chapter of my life where I was connected to comics in some way. And for my school newspaper, I decided to be the comic editor and I would write comics for them. And then in high school, in college, I wrote a paper on Bill Watterson. I loved Calvin and Hobbes, just the type of humor. And again, he, you know, Bill Watterson, the illustrator and author, talked a lot about serious things sometimes through humor. I learned so many words that I probably should not have learned. You know, wonderful. Just, I had such a great upbringing with when it came to comics. And it was such it was like a 180 moment when I ended up getting published by the same publisher.
That's that owned,
like Bill Watterson and you know, and Calvin and Hobbes and Foxtrot and all these cool things. So I started crying like when I was in the actual, when I went to visit and like you could see them everywhere and their art hanging on the walls. And then they wanted me to do my art and hang it on the wall. And I was like absolutely crying. I did a paper in college on Bill Watterson. It's just something that's just constantly just been in my life. I loved the concept of telling a story and sharing your experiences through art and humor. And then I followed eventually, with social media, I started following a lot of webcomic artists. And, you know, I after Trump was elected, I noticed that a lot of them were starting to include Muslim characters, just kind of existing, just in the background. And I loved it. I was just like, oh my God, it's like the first time I've ever seen a hijabi in a comic. You know, and these are illustrators that I respect and you know, really enjoy, you know, reading. And so kind of like went like, dang. Why don't I do it myself? I don't know how to draw, but who cares? Let's just start. I have the jokes.
You know, judging by the way comic book, what comics have become now, I'm sure hopefully in the next 20, 30 years, we'll see a cinematic universe of Huda FRU in the movie industry, inshallah. Oh, wow, there we go. Scoop. You mentioned that it was kind of, hopefully I'm not misquoting you, but you mentioned that it was kind of like the post-Trump era where you kind of started this whole webcomic, series. How do you think Trump, I guess, inadvertently helped change Muslim perceptions in America for the better? I mean, one thing that really shocked me, and I'm sure Hasnain, you were privy to this as well, was after, you know, when he did the whole Muslim ban thing, how many normal American, non-Muslim Americans came out and protested for Muslims. Like it was absolutely like unbelievable. I could not believe how many people were out there protesting, saying, no, Muslims are us. You know, we're here to defend Muslims, like that. Especially in the post 9/11 America, like I could never even fathom that. I thought that was phenomenal. And showed me that really that there's a disconnect between, kind of like the supremacist ideologies that lead in America and the actual people themselves. So I guess, how do you think Trump inadvertently helped change Muslim perceptions in America that way?
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, we saw this post 9/11, when 9/11 happened, we saw a huge increase in people converting to Islam and learning more about Islam, because it's just in the news so much. And a lot of people want to know what is this thing that's being talked about, and Islam being the most beautiful religion and the truth, you know, you can't help but, you know, be completely amazed by it. And I think similarly, you know, people are listening to what's being talked about again. And with Trump, it's just the fact that it was with social media, and it was just more immediate, and it was more like happening right now, and you can see it like almost live, people's reactions, and it was much more visceral, much more hate-filled, and maybe just because it was in our faces, you know, in our phones and 24/7. And then something interesting happened, is where you started seeing a call for authentic Muslim stories from people who are like, you know, who want to stand up and actually want to like pass the mic to Muslims and you know, to hear what they actually have to say, but, you know, to try to counter this horrific, you know, stuff that was being said and done to people, a group of people, simply because of the religion that they follow. And it was actually because of that open call that specifically for authors, I started becoming interested in, oh, you know, I have a story. I've majored in English. I've always kind of wanted to be a writer. And so I started applying and querying agents, and I hadn't quite found my niche or what I wanted to do. And so, you know, it shows. And so I was, you know, all of rejection letters and all that came in. And so I thought, well, I have social media, and I'll just, I'll tell my story that way. And so I feel like a lot of people, indirectly, because of just the, you know, what Trump was saying and the unfortunate support of these people, which really felt like half the nation, felt this way, just made you be like, well, I'm going to be the change I want to see, or I'm going to be the representation I want to see. And a lot of people started to really work on that. And so you see this huge influx of Muslim authors and filmmakers and, you know, artists and creators. And it's wonderful. It's just been a really, and from all different types too of Muslims. So at the very least, what I hope people take away is that Muslims are nuanced, and that they're not this one type of, you know, caricature or stereotype that they're constantly showing on TV.
Did you expect it to become what it is?
And I tried. It was a calculated effort, but I did not expect it to work. Like, it was definitely, I tried. There was like free resources online, on Kindle, like how to grow your Instagram following and, you know, stuff like that. And so I did try to see if I could, but I had no reason to expect that it would take off the way it had, or as quickly as it had. It's from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I do not feel like, I don't know. I thought it was going to be really niche. I've said this before. I thought, you know, yes, I'm hot in this, specifically about how hot a hijabi is, and that it was going to be only funny to hijabis, and which I thought, that's fine. We don't have anything that's just for us. So, you know, let this be just for us. And it turned out to really resonate with a lot of people.
Honestly, I think if I can give my own kind of commentary, I think the reason it resonates so much is it seems to come from such a place of authenticity, from a place of you. And I feel like when art comes from a place of a real authentic place, from a you know, I think that's really when it resonates more with others. And I think, honestly, that, personally, I think that's a tried and tested method. And I'm just going through some of your comics here, and just I've been following you for some time, but every so often, honestly, whenever I see someone sharing it, it just kind of brightens up my day, because it always never fails to make me laugh. There's this one that you posted the other day about it was back in February, the Dogecoin one. I don't even remember that one. I can't show it on screen right now, but basically it's that image of the guy and the girl walking, and he's looking at another girl. But instead, it's your husband or someone, and you walking and looking at Dogecoin, and on your husband says, "Solid financial advice, me," and he's looking at Dogecoin. So I just love how incredibly relevant, and it's not always specific to Muslim issues either. You know, I mean, it's just like this is me. This is what we know. And there's
this what happened. Did I invest in Doge? Yes, I did. Did my husband try to talk me out of it? Yes, he did. Did I end up making money? Yes, I did.
So basically, you made it to increase the price so you can sell it at a specific point. Got it. You see what she did? It's a meme coin, so she made a meme out of it.
But my favorite one for sure is making fun of this horrible human being, Boris Johnson, where he's like face covers for everyone. And this is great. No, not for you. I love that so much. One thing I wanted to ask you about was you wrote a book on, you've written like three books now, two books you've released, right, and one for pre-order. One of yours is called That Can Be Arranged, and it's specific to marriage. Why was it so important to you to dedicate a whole book specifically to the challenges, I guess, of finding, which we all know it's a very challenging process for some it's very easy, by the way, which always surprises me. But why do you feel it was important to dedicate a whole book to that specific subject?
You know, I had a great title and I was like, I gotta find a story to fit this title.
It was a great title. It is a great title.
You know, if I don't know if you've read it or not, but the story is more about the journey that I went through loving myself and having that really be, I hoped, the takeaway. And because Jihad, my husband, is not in it until literally like the last couple pages. It ends with us getting married and then it just kind of stops, because it's not about him. It really wasn't about getting married. It was, how did I come to the understanding, or to love myself enough to know and understand that it's not the end all be all of my life. I wanted to also go into, I've always thought it was so funny. Like I said, I majored in English. We had to take several Jane Austen classes, and it was whenever I read Jane Austen, I always was like, well, this sounds exactly like how Muslims get married, like with the aunties and the how much does he make and the dowry and the, you know, how many pounds a year does she get or does he make, whatever. And, the judgment and the feeling for the woman who feels like this is all I'm meant to do is just get married. And I was like, but Jane Austen is revered. Why are Muslim marriages always looked at, especially arranged marriages, they're always talked about in such a negative way, in such a, almost like a tone of disgust and shame and embarrassment. And I was like, I love it. Like, this was what, I'm so glad that this is how I got married. And I know people who think that it's like forced, and, you know, which of course is haram in Islam. And I think that, that topic, it's such a taboo topic, and I really wanted to shine light on it and be like, well, it's not, and here's why, and here's this is not a forced marriage, and those are wrong. Excuse me. Oh. And then that's all. I just wanted to really talk about it and kind of bring up the whole, we are so similar. We don't have to be. That's okay for us to be different. But look, we still have these similarities, these things that you guys make dozens of the same kind of movie about. And then you turn around and you judge us and who are about having the same almost exact kind of culture, rituals, or whatever. Do you not see like how messed up that is? And so I kind of just wanted to really write this story. So there's so much that went into it about, you know, it was a journey of self-discovery and self-love. It was a journey of comparing, you know, cultures and making people kind of, you know, realize their own biases and stuff like that. So it was such, to me, it's such an important book, an important story. And it sucks because it came out during COVID, literally like lockdown was in March and that's when it was out. So all my events got canceled so I was so disappointed. SubhanAllah, but khair, yani, I always make that for the best. But I love that book, and I love, it makes me laugh so much. And it's I'm very hard on myself. So for me to be able to say that about a book that I've written, I think it's a big deal. Read it if you haven't. Those who are listening, that can be arranged. I think it's hilarious.
Hasnain, I know you're opening your mouth, but before you jump in, let me just make this quick point. I love that message, because one thing I'm going to get a bit anti-clerical here, but one thing that really upsets me about, you know, in our community, we get a lot of speakers that come in and fly in and give obviously Islamic lectures and stuff. And one thing that really upsets me is that a lot of these speakers, historically, I'm saying when I was growing up, they would come and give lectures and say, listen, get married when you're young. Get married when you're young. The Prophet emphasized getting married when you're young, which of course we know is a sunnah, right? But there's obviously a lot of, you know, bits and bobs and context to it. And what would happen was so many youth, including myself, would spend the early years of our youth focusing on getting married in whatever way we can, and just and wasting our early years instead of finding ourselves and being comfortable with ourselves, trying to get married. I remember there was one speaker who came. Such simple advice. He's the first speaker I remember in my life to say this at the age of, I think, almost 22 at the time. He said, don't get married when you're young. Get married when you're ready. And I think that single line contained more wisdom than, you know, and honestly, it was very damaging, you know, that kind of advice that was being given. So I'm so glad that you tackled that, because it is very important to, I feel like this is something that so many Muslims, and I'm going to be, it's a very sweeping statement, but so many Muslims, I guess, maybe perhaps in the immigrant community, struggle with this, being comfortable with yourself, finding yourself, loving yourself. That's something that it's very hard for us to do for whatever reason. And I feel like we need to reach that point of, it's obviously a continuous life journey, but we really need to strive down that path so that when we do get married, you get married for the right reasons, you get married to the right person. You know, you're able to sustain that marriage. You're able to sustain your relationships, your vision, and everything else in between. So I just want to drop that bit of annoyance in my head. Hasnain, go ahead.
I haven't read the book, but I'm looking forward to definitely picking it up. And I'm not certified to give marriage advice because I am not married.
But thank you. many unmarried men feel like it.
I am no right to say anything, but to your point, Huda, and to your point, Nuri, like, I got that same advice. Like, get married when you're young, right? And in my opinion, I was like, hey, I have akal, I have my own mind, I can figure this out on my own. When you were writing this book, did you kind of see a clash, or did you kind of discover a clash when it came to the topic of marriage between Islam and between your culture? Because I find it many times where not even just marriage, right? Just anything that has to do with anything, you know, this is kind of what we do, right? But then it clashes with Islam. But, you know, for example, I'm Pakistani and there's a Pakistani culture to certain things and there's an Islamic way of doing it. But through your journey of writing the book, did you see, like, did you kind of ever just find yourself noticing, like, wait, this is not what Islam says, but why do we do this culturally? And that clash of the worlds.
Yeah. One of the things that it talked about were the rules that my parents put down when we were growing up. And it was like, don't talk to men, don't talk to boys. Which, of course, once I entered the real world and they weren't there, I was like the weirdest person in the world, have no idea how to talk to guys. No, when in reality, and we know in Islam, that you definitely can talk to, you know, men can talk to women, and there are, you know, there are ways to do it in a way that is good and safe and you know, halal. And we were never taught that. We were taught such a strict, you know, which very much is a cultural thing. And of course you see it more imposed on women and not as much on men. And it was, you know, something that I had to kind of almost realize for myself, that this was very much a my mom and dad problem and not like me and an Islam problem or anything like that. So that's just the first thing that comes to my mind. And then there are other things that are definitely cultural, that I was okay with it. As long as I knew that this was not like, I was not going to be, you know, it was not going to be haram if I did something. But it would be disappointing my parents if I did something, and I didn't want to do that. So I, like, for example, when I first saw my husband in real life, and I mentioned this in the book, at a conference, the sheikh offered to be the third party. Like, we were in an open conference room and he was like, I'll sit there while you guys talk. And I was like, oh, absolutely. This is if I don't want this to work, I'll sit there and make this talk, because my parents, if they ever found out that I sat and talked to a dude without them even knowing, they would just be like, you're probably pregnant with this baby. And I'm like, my God, no. And so I was like, no, Sheikh, thank you so much. I'm going to call my mom and dad, and I'm going to ask their permission first. And alhamdulillah, because they were all, both of them were like, no, you can't sit there with the Sheikh, even though there was nothing haram in it, and sitting in this open public space with the Sheikh there and talking to Jihad, because he was in Texas and I lived in Michigan at the time. And I didn't want to make Jihad fly all the way to Michigan if we didn't have any chemistry, which we could have found out in 2 minutes. Right. But I was like, I'm not going to take any chances. So I'm going to listen to my mom. And even the Sheikh was like, are you serious? And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, you don't know my mom and dad. So those are some things that I just, you know, again, they kind of clashed, and I knew that it's not in Islam that what I would have done would okay, but I knew it would disappoint my mom and dad, and I don't want to do that. So I don't want to start a relationship off in a negative way, especially with my parents. So I don't know if that answers the full question, but
I can go on such a tangent right now. There's so much I can say about this topic, but I'm going to bite my lip. But yeah, definitely there's a, I feel like it is such an important book, inshallah. I honestly haven't read it yet, but inshallah, I can't wait to order it and read it myself, because I do feel like those themes resonate with me a lot, and a lot of Muslims will resonate with it. I think it's important really to mobilize our youth growing up in the right way and give them the right perspective on marriage, right perspective on spouse selection, because you can also go, I guess, too far to the left as well sometimes, which I think a lot of people do. And you know, one thing you mentioned in the beginning was you know, when you grew up, you weren't really allowed to talk to boys, which I kind of get the protectiveness around that. I remember, I'll throw in one more anti-clerical statement. forgive me, everyone. But I remember that there was a speaker who came and he said he was giving a story about one of the Sahaba who basically walk past a group of women and not say salam. He goes, we should be like that, in that when we see a woman, don't even say salam, just walk past. And it's like, I get it, the context, you know, the I get the moral of the story. But contextually now, all the youth who are in your lecture are going to go out and never speak to girls until they get married. And then when they do get married, they're not going to know how to speak to the opposite gender, which is, you know, yeah, yeah. So I'm going to move on before I go crazy. But
save it for episode two, okay? We'll have another episode for that for all three of us.
Huda, one winding down, one question we ask everyone who bring on, and you know, everyone who bring on is of a variety of artistic talents and also on a vast spiritual spectrum. You know, some people are very practicing, some people not so much, some people, I guess, practice in their own way. Various different types of Muslims from all sides of the spectrum as well. How does your art, what relationship does your art have to your spirituality? And of course, spirituality means different things to different people. And how, I guess, how do the two, I guess, complement each other?
I've never been asked that question. And so I seem stumped. I try never to make a fatwa. I don't know. Like, I don't want my comics to be taken as like religious, you know. I don't know how to explain it.
Religious, like, you're not like a religious authority, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes. I want people to see that, you know, even within the madhahib, like, there are different schools of thought, that it's okay to have different schools of thought. And so I try never to really show more one, because I don't want to alienate everybody or anybody. And because a lot of times, unfortunately, we see in our community where if you don't do it this way, you are not a good Muslim, or you've stepped into kufr and you are not a Muslim at all. And it drives so many people away from Islam. And it drives so many, especially young kids, who think that because they made one mistake, or because they're not, oh, that's just too hard, this specific practice or something, I can't do it. Oh, I can't wear makeup, or oh, I can't listen to music. And oh God, I must be a horrible person or horrible Muslim. I'm just going to not be Muslim at all. You know, and unfortunately, that's just, I take this for my own, you know, when I was a kid and I would hear these kind of things. So my spirituality is mine. It's very personal to me. It's very much my own relationship between me and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I will never do or say anything that is compromises my deen in my comics. So you'll never see me cuss, regardless of what my book is called. There's no cussing in the book. And I came up with that title when I was 15 years old. I dedicated it to my mother, who hates the title, and she hates that I dedicated it to her. but I swear I do not cuss in real life. You know, I am very fit.
And now it's your Instagram profile picture.
It's marketing. I'm just, you know, it'll go back. But no, so for me, for my personal spirituality, I don't think if anyone ever tries to guess what my relationship is like with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they'll be wrong no matter what, because I try to keep that very separate from my comics. You know, I'm not a scholar. I'm not somebody who you should look to give religious advice. If anything, I take the live by example is all I'm trying to do, is live my life by, you know, by the sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and do my best in that way. But you know, so in that sense, I guess that's the only way that it's connected to my comics, is you'll never see me cross a boundary that I would never cross in real life. So I don't know if that
does. No, amazing. Hastin, go ahead.
I had nothing. I was going to say that was profound.
Oh, you unmute yourself. Yeah. When you unmute yourself, that means you can also.
I listen. There's a lot of noise in the background when I unmute myself, because I just want to have, you know, something to say, and then that's it. But that was amazing.
It was. It was very profound. I really appreciate you, Huda. What do the next 10 years look like for you?
I don't know.
Stop asking so many hard questions, man.
I feel so bad. All my questions have been so hard.
It's refreshing. No, I am working on the sequel to Huda for You, and already, alhamdulillah, it was, you know, we're it's a go already, and so I'm just currently finishing the edits to send back. I've spoken to a couple. What is the word? Producers, I can't think of the word, but anyway, so you know, I talked to a few, so we're working on that as well on that end.
Cinematic universe,
yeah, that's why I was like, maybe possible movie, possible TV show, we'll see.
Inshallah, let's do it.
Because it's such a sensitive topic, and we've seen Muslims get like even when it's written by Muslims or it's a Muslim director or something, I feel like we're still waiting to, and I do not at all make that presumption that I am going to be the one that cracks the code of making something with Muslims in it that like pleases all Muslims. But like, you know, we've seen so many hijabis who just like take off their hijab or start going to the club, and it's always for some dude, or it's always, I'm free now. And it's like, I know that these Muslims exist. Maybe can we tell other stories as well? And, you know, so I'm just very careful with my work, because I don't want that to happen to my characters at all. And so it's been a struggle to find people to work with that are on the same page. So make that, we're going to do it, inshallah.
For sure, inshallah. Huda, appreciate you so much. Honestly, just speaking to you, I can sense the sincerity that comes from you, inshallah. And it's so wonderful to connect with you after following your work for such a long time. Where can people follow you, and where can people buy your two books and your upcoming book as well?
All right. You guys can follow me. Yes, I'm hot in this. It is all one word, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Or you can just Google my name, Huda Fahmi. And you can find all my books on Amazon, anywhere books are sold. You can find them, and you can pre-order Huda FRU. It will come out in November, inshallah. Pre-orders are much appreciated. Again, these are, I feel, such great stories, and they're different kind of stories. So I hope I get you guys' support, inshallah.
Appreciate you, Huda. Of course, always. Yeah. Thank you so much.